Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Slacker Podcast. Season 2 is just finishing up now. We've got 3 episodes left of Season 2. If you have been following the Slacker Podcast, you probably noticed that we started Season 2 at the very beginning of the year, and sort of weirdly enough, around about May time, we took a massive break. Simply due to the fact that I had a book that came out in May. If you listen to the other podcast as well, you will have heard me go on and on and on and on and on and on and on about the Slacker's Guide to the Music Industry. Listen, I'm not going to go on about it too much. All I'm going to say is, if you play music, if you have a friend that plays music and you're releasing music, this is the book that you need as your little guide, as your little companion. There'll be a link somewhere below this if you want to get a copy of it as well. I'm really excited to get the podcast back and going. I've got Season 2 all wrapped up, and I'm already planning Season 3, and I've got some incredible guests already booked in for Season 3. But listen, let's not wish the day away. We have got our very, very first podcast right now, which I will tell you a little bit about just after I remind you that BBC Introducing Live is coming to London at the very, very beginning of November. And I will be putting details of what that is and what it's all about below. Basically, it's got all the advice that you need over 3 days, and all the key speakers that you need to hear from, and they'll be talking about all of the nuts and bolts about the music industry, about festivals, about pretty much everything. It's kind of the same sort of thing as my book, but multiplied by a bajillion people, and in London. So you can get tickets to BBC Introducing Live if you're interested in that on the link below. Today's podcast is with Serge Pizzorno. Am I saying that right? Serge Pizzorno from Kasabian. I really hope I'm not saying that right. People will let me know. I definitely know that people will let me know on Twitter if I'm not. So Serge from Kasabian popped by, and it was one of the last recordings I did at Soho Radio. Since then, I've got like this Rode piece of equipment. It's like a Rode Procaster. It's like a little portable studio and some posh mics and stuff, so I'm really, really excited about testing that out. But anyway, needless to say, I'm nerding out on that. But Serge from Kasabian, I had posters of Kasabian on my wall at my university when I was just starting out. I absolutely adored Kasabian, and especially around that time as well, I think I was quite into, like, you know, the typical thing that boys are into, like, when they're teenagers, like Stone Roses and Oasis and all the rest of it, Primal Scream. They kind of didn't feel like our generation had their own. We kind of felt like we were looking back to the 90s or looking back to the 80s. And with Kasabian, we were like, right, okay, taking this one on board as my own. And, you know, they've sort of changed up their style from album to album, and yeah, they've just gone on to be a bit of an institution when it comes to rock and roll music in the UK. So we didn't sit down with the whole of Kasabian, we sat down with Serge, simply because Serge is just an absolute legend, and he also has his own project called the SLF, which is coming out in, which should be out actually by now, or if not, then this Friday, the album. And he's got some incredible collabs on there with Lil Sims and Slow Tie. And it kind of, imagine like Damon Albarn, right? Imagine Blur to Damon Albarn to what Gorillaz is to Damon Albarn. I feel like the SLF is what Gorillaz is, and Kasabian is what Blur is. Does that make any sense? It probably doesn't. It's very early on a Sunday morning, and I'm like about two gulps through my first cup of tea. But we're going to get into it right now. It's really good to have everybody back. I'm very excited about bringing the Slacker Podcast back for a couple of episodes, and then taking another break, and then really, really getting into the nitty gritty of Series 3. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and remember to like it and review it. Do people still say that? It feels like it's been months since I've said that. Like, review if you do, and if you don't, then fine. Here we go. The Slacker Podcast with Serge from Kasabian in 3, 2, 1.
You can tell a lot about a man when you go to make a cup of tea for him.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. There's like some psychology behind it all.
Well, yeah. Like, you can tell a lot about a person when they make a cup of tea for you.
Yeah.
And you can go, oh, it's very weak. There's a lot of, like, oh, there's a lot of milk in that or something. So I made you a cup of tea before you started. And I was like, I wonder, does he like take any fancy milk? Does he like take almond milk or oat milk or any of the rest of it? I was really happy. But I have a lot of friends that have turned vegan recently.
Yeah, man.
And you were just like normal milk. And yeah. I was like, yes. Yes, there's still a couple of us. I grew up on a dairy farm, you see. So I see like vegans like slapping my relatives in the face.
Of course, yeah.
Every time they open up a can of
it's good tea. It's a good brew.
It'll do.
It's not bad. Let me just go, it's a good more time. Yeah. No, it's good. It's solid.
Good.
I'd probably go if you know, maybe a little stronger, but that for you know, for first time meeting you, mate, it's pretty good.
If it was like a first date, like
yeah, I'd
get a second one, but
definitely
like,
we're over.
There'd
the
be
first,
no drinks after the
first hurdle. We're past the first hurdle.
How you doing? How's things?
Yeah, great. Really good. Really good. Yeah.
You've got like I'm really admiring the new haircut you've got. Yeah. Like you've got like leopard print around the side of your head. I have like absolutely no idea even how you would go about.
Do you know what? It's, my wife did it. She's not a hairdresser she's really good at stuff. And we watched a YouTube video and she was like, yeah, I think I can do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, let's go. So I just, you know, got the peroxide and a paintbrush, and then she just did it. And then in an hour, it's really good job. Like everyone's like, wow,
yeah,
she's really nailed it.
She needs to open up. Like,
I know, man, she's too good.
She needs to open up a place. Like, what is it? You're Leicester at the
moment. Yeah, yeah.
The kids of Leicester be like, running around looking like hyenas and tigers and stuff like that.
I might go zebra next. I might do it.
Did you get your? Did you have your hair bleached as a kid?
I did that. When was it? 95. You know that time where like a lot of, you know, it was kind of a thing.
Yeah.
95.
For me,
a few footballers did it, and it was like a big thing.
David Beckham was the first to do it. I remember that. I did it because of Eminem, but I didn't go full Slim Shady. I went for the streaks. So they like put
nice.
They put the like smelly peroxide stuff over your head.
Yeah.
And then they just like pop. Oh no, they put cling film over
your
head.
That's right. And they pop it through the hole.
They pop it through the hole. And it was like, I thought I was so cool.
I bet you were.
Yeah,
man. That sounds pretty bad.
No, big time. Like I think like the band that I ended up being a part of. We met at a football course, like, you know, when you're like 13 or 14, and we just sort of like met. We were all getting our hair streaked at the same time. We were like talking about like how much we loved like Papa Roach and Limp Bizkit.
Remember those? Man.
Yeah. You know, like, I think when you are like a music fan, you have to look back at some of the stuff you listened to as a teenager and cringe a lot.
They were doing a thing though, you know. It was like
it was a scene,
and it was a tribe, and it was like, you know, it was rebellious in it, you know, when looking back now.
If you think about it, right, like, so it was a perfect age because there was nothing happening in the UK at that time. Yeah. Britpop was over and the sort of like indie boom was about 3 or 4 years off.
Of course.
So it's like you've got...
What are we talking, like, late?
We got Bar and Wasteland between 98 and about 2002, 2003.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because even like the Strokes took a while to come over here. You guys started about like... Well, you guys kicked off about 2004.
Oh, exactly, yeah. So just after the boom.
Do you know, it's a weird thing. Like when you guys started, I was doing my AS levels, which is the sixth year, which is the one before you leave.
Okay.
And there was a guy going, right, we had to go to all the universities to try and pick what university we wanted to go. Yeah. Two of the universities we went to, they were giving away Kasabian posters, like the front, and this is in Northern Ireland as well.
That's good.
So, like the front cover of the debut album, when you went up to the university, like they'd hand you that. So then, when you went down to the round to anybody's house back in Omagh, all the lads of 16, 17 year old had your album poster. So, like, half the people knew who you were at just that stage, the people just thought it was like a real bonkers looking image and stuck it up on their wall.
I mean, that's. Where are those people, like, labels used to be really clever. That's actually a really good idea.
Isn't it?
Yeah, especially then to do it at that specific time where you do go home and you've got a dorm, your walls are bare. And that's good.
Smart.
That's really...
I think it appealed to, like...
Taking that back off myself.
Yeah, big time. I think that image appealed to people in Northern Ireland as well, because it kind of had a sort of, balaclava look to it.
Oh, no, it was
dangerous, like...
It was an intense image. That came from, I've been my wife since we were, like, 15. So I was sifting through this, like, old... I had a book. It's like Russian propaganda, and because we kind of wanted something, we were fascinated with sort of like this, like, propaganda and ultras and this kind of, like, you know, this sort of iconography from that sort of, you know, like, symbolism, this power, and this, and we found this like Russian cartoon. It's way more cartoony than the original, but it just had a. And it sort of had like a balaclava on. I think it was like an early sort of like socialist fighter or something. So she drew that, and then we took it into the label and said, look, this is what we want as the logo, the man. And then it kind of got to, like, a graphics team took it and simplified it. But it was kind of, that's where it came from, just this.
I think the best images always come from the bands.
Yeah, always.
Always comes from the bands themselves.
Totally. Yeah.
Like they know what they want to sound like, they know what the aesthetic is. Yeah. Like, you know, I've worked with bands from, like, my label side of things, and I've seen bands from the radio side of things, and they've got, like, everything handed to them, and you're just like, no, that's not how it is.
You can smell it, can't you?
Big time. Like, even, like, bands like the Stone Roses would go around spray painting their names all over, like, Manchester and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That to me is, like, way cooler than...
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. We used to do, I mean, that was...
Jeff and Kensington going, this is what you should do.
Like, algorithms and trying to, you know, it's like... We were like, yeah, I mean, we used to bomb around in a metro and stencil that got that the figure, you know, in Leicester.
Yeah.
Just on shopping centres and bus shelters and stuff.
I wonder, like, what the sort of, like... I wonder, can you still get done for that? Like,
probably, yeah. Now, I mean, there's probably more cameras on. There's more eyes on the city now than you've ever seen. So.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the sort of new Kasabian coming up and doing that. Like, they'll never get the second album because it'll all be in the clink. Yeah. So, like, we're gonna start with a demo. I love hearing bands not first demos, but like just demos of big songs.
Yeah,
because you get a real idea.
It's funny. It's funny this one because I've not. So this was on my original computer, the Cubase computer, which I would have had probably sort of maybe early 2000s. So the first album was recorded on this computer. And I, for whatever reason, I can't remember why, I started Fire, which we're going to listen to, on this old computer. Now, I'd moved to sort of like Pro Tools, getting a bit techie now, but I was, you know, my studio at home.
Your checks come true at this point.
Exactly.
Like, right,
and I had some spare cash, and it was like, I was still, it was still a bedroom studio though. And I was just going, I wonder what like opening an old computer and go, oh, I should write on that again, because that there was some magic on that.
Yeah. You know?
So, it was done on there, and I so I had to open up this computer, it's not been, you know, it's mad when you see old graphics, old computers.
With like the Windows, like,
fucking
98.
Hell, man. Yeah,
like, Windows 98, just goes,
yeah, exactly. And everything's like, you just go, wow, that looks old, ancient. And it's like, yeah, click, like, all the pop-up menus look bad. And it's just like, and it, virus check before you're doing it. Like, everything takes forever. It's like, fuck, this looks so old. And then it sort of opened, and then press play, and it's like, oh man, this is, yeah. And it's funny because you can, so what's really interesting, you can get a real sense of my process, and almost like you know where it's going to end up. It's like, wow, that's, you can see me feeling around the dark almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I listened to it before. I normally I don't, but I was too yeah, I was too nosy. Yeah. And I listened to it on the train on the way here, and I was like, wow, it's like, that bit's the same. Oh, that bit's completely different.
Yeah, yeah,
I was like,
yeah,
that bit's really good, but they've obviously, the producer or somebody in the band's gone, you better write a better riff for that,
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, yeah. That's funny because, yeah, the big riff, that was like a placeholder. There's a couple of notes that are similar, but that was a complete and utter, because, you know, we went in the studio, because I just do these home demos, and we went in the studio, and I just literally played that riff as it was. I just said, just play the track and I'm just going to do something.
Yeah.
And I did the riff, and it's like, I don't know how, why, and that riff's like obviously become what it's become, but it's like, man, that I didn't think it was just, I just quickly did it now, yeah, go, did it, you know, and then I just went, oh, I'll just make something
bottled
up.
The lightning.
Just make something up as it passed, you know?
I'm going to hit play on it now, and yeah, like, even like the Massive Sabian fans are going to, and even the people who like are just listening to this podcast are just going to, going to know instantly when that bit hits. So right, I'm going to play this now, and we're going to keep quiet and bow in its reverence for 2 minutes and 49. We'll be back in a minute.
Yeah, it's mad. This all stayed on, this first bit. Because I tried to record it again, and it's like, nah, that guitar is just so battered. Yeah, I was trying to do like Elvis. I was trying to get like, uh-huh. I was trying to do like real Elvis. That's like real New Order vibes, isn't it?
Yeah. I loved that about the first album, all of the sort of like,
yeah, this acid moment.
Yeah,
yeah, that was it's funny because that is that synth is from the first record. It's like a specific synth on
it. Tell.
Yeah.
Is that like modulated? Do you play that or like?
Do you know what? That's literally just drawn in.
Huh?
Just drawn in randomly.
Oh, is it?
And then I just get stoned, have it loop.
Yeah.
And then just delete, keep moving stuff around. And then go out that bit, and then.
Yeah.
And in the end, you go, okay, after an hour, you can get something insane.
Yeah, I think a lot of bands around that time, they tried to emulate you, just couldn't do that.
No, it's weird, you're right. It's like there's like a certain head that knows. It's all about taste, all of it, really. Mm. There's like knowing what notes to use. You've got to have a. You always know. Oh, sorry,
you're right. That was the Kasabian demo of Fire. What year did that? Like, did you make that? Was that like part of the first album session, second album session? I know it came out on the third.
Yeah. So when did that album come out? 2010 or 2009? 09. It came out in 09. So yeah, I did that. That was probably like 08. But it was we needed a B-side when you still did B-sides. Mm. And we needed a B-side. So that was kind of going to be the B-side. And then we went in the studio. And then it turned.
No.
Yeah, it turned into something else pretty quickly.
Yeah.
As soon as a beat went down, as soon as I had that riff, and I was like, oh, you know what? There's something magic. There's something about this that has combined a lot of. It's just got that special. I don't know whatever that is.
That's you.
Yeah,
getting a little bit of peace and quiet in your house.
Yeah,
just sitting right. How did the rest of the lads feel when you brought that into practice?
I mean, as you they're used to it now because it always starts a little bit skewed and a little bit mad, and the structure's always insane. I always go right, try and be as creative and be as kind of loose with it all, and then bring it back. But. I don't think anyone really knew that it was going to be what it was going to be.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I always heard, like, what I liked is having that sort of Elvis. So I do that, like, oh, I mean, that's proper, you know. And there's a playfulness in that. And then it kicks to like a riff. And then it's got the hook on the end of it. And in my head, I was like, yeah, there's something like we've got it. And then when it starts to come together,
is this your suspicious mind?
I think so. And that sort of like house, like that the sequency bit, you know, I've always you can hear in all the work. It's like there's those synth breakdowns and those like sort of house moments.
Yeah, they're like I was saying to you like off mic that they're impossible to replicate. Like, because I think my band was about, we were just kicking off really about that time. So we were massively inspired by like the riffs that you guys had in Kasabian.
Amazing.
And we had our like riff and we were like, yeah, this is sick.
Yeah.
And we were like, right, we need a breakdown. And we'd be sitting there as like none of us could play synth or like none of us like listened to dance music at that stage. And we were like, oh, fuck, this sounds really dreadful.
It's funny because, like, it's funny when bands get synths. You can always hear, like, in the studio, it's like, we need to do something new and caught different. Oh, we'll get the synths out. And you go, you know, like, you just have to, you know, you have to have a background in it. Well, you don't, but what I mean is, like, there's certain moves and certain sounds and... I've done a lot of research.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I spent time digging through numerous million electronics.
Are you like a Moog man? Like a The thing about synth guys is the synth guys are genuinely really nerdy.
I know. I mean, I think I am actually. Yeah. I it's great because all the synths I bought, they're now worth like five times as much. They're like the best investment I've ever made. You know? I mean, I've never get rid of them and I don't give a shit about any of that. But it's funny, like, you know, I collected them and now like they're really hard to get a hold of.
Yeah,
but that particular one is just a plugin from Cubase and I use that throughout. That's my go-to sound.
So if I was going back to the start, what was the first guitar that you played? Like, when did you get it? And what was the first thing you learned on it?
Well, because I started, like, for me, like, my first musical instrument was, like, an Akai sampler and an Atari. That's kind of where I started.
Yeah.
So production, that was kind of where I started. And then...
So what sort of stuff were you, like, sampling? Was that, like, hip-hop and dance?
Yeah, music? Yeah. Because I was, like, a rave kid, like, hardcore. Yeah. That was my awakening. Like, you know, Top Buzz and DJ SS and...
Uh-huh.
That I was, like... East Midlands back then.
808 State and stuff like that.
Exactly, yeah. KLF. And like, I was a rave kid. And then sort of when the Britpop explosion happened, I was kind of the prime age, like 14. So I sort of had this background of hardcore drum and bass. And then this, like, I was sort of hitting like school and then this explosion happened and then... Obviously, Oasis happened, and that's when I bought a guitar and a chord book.
Yeah,
and like just learned that.
Noel Gallagher made it acceptable for young men to play guitar.
Yes, no, absolutely.
Because before Noel Gallagher, if you had a guitar, everybody saw you as like a little bit of a, like, I'm speaking from experience, like, absolutely, this is an awful way that people would have seen you, but they would have seen you as a little bit of a bad weather.
Oh, 100%.
It would have been, you know, playing your just like your little folk song.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah, no, and totally.
He's this gruff dude.
Yeah, no,
who
no,
sat
exactly.
sat in a car park, like, what was it? He like wrote loads of songs and like this little, he was the guy that let people into the car park and he wrote all this like songs in a hut or whatever. Yeah. And you're like, going, yeah, he's one of us. He's like, he likes football.
No, exactly. No, it's true because I was like when the grunge thing was happening, because I was so into my hardcore. It's weird calling it that. I don't ever think of it that, but that's what it was called. Like I was like it, that was so on the opposite scale. Which now it's funny because I've gone back like you know, Nirvana's probably, you know, up there for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But
totally.
At the time, I was like, man, if it's not got like an, if it's not got like a little Roland 909 on it, and a, you know what I mean,
yeah, or
yeah, then it's like it's not for me. So then, like, so I missed the grunge thing, and then the Britpop explosion happened. That's when I got a guitar and a chord book, and then locked myself away. Not no lessons and such. Just like literally learnt Oasis songs and Beatles songs, Who songs.
Yeah,
but I see Oasis were like the doorway. It's like they opened. That's when I really got into, because, you know, that's when I found the Beatles and then Stones. And then you just go on this journey then, and then you hear, oh, there's Doors, and then you hear, then you get in even deeper, it's, and you get into Can, and you get into, you know what I mean?
You
sort of go
in Kraftwerk, and you're like, right, God,
exactly.
Where am I?
Yeah.
Where did I start?
I know. And then you start digging for records. Like there's a little archway under the railway station. And, you know, then we start digging for breaks. And that was a, you know, that was a like, we used to go every Sunday, and now you can just get them online, which is great, but man, to get a break back in the day was so hard.
That's the drum and bass man in you, isn't it?
Yeah, man. And the hip-hop, it's like, to get that break was impossible.
Well, that's like, I think probably why a lot of people latched on to Kasabian in the at the beginning. Like the people my age who didn't experience Primal Scream the first time around, or people who of my age who just like guitar music were finding this like quasi sort of like half euphoric dance music,
yeah,
half guitar music, and you're just like, this is great.
Yeah,
I don't know how I feel. Like you, yeah, like, yeah, it was the awakening that you had to dance music and to Oasis and stuff, you've kind of put together and given to a whole new generation.
Yeah, yeah, that was it. That was always the thing. I mean, they operated on such a massive level as well, Oasis, and the parallels with it was about connecting for us. That's kind of, we wanted to bring people together because that background of the rave culture, and then, you know, this huge like Nebworth things that always,
yeah,
it was about a community and a unity and about bringing as many people from everywhere together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like, and we needed the soundtrack of that with the music for that, and it's like that's how we get there. It's like we can, and not just sound like a band, because that wasn't exciting at all.
Yeah, no, and nor did it. Like when I used to read Enemy flat out, around that time every single week.
Yeah, man.
And I remember, like, when I was sitting down to think, and I was like thinking back to myself at that age, and I just remember being really intrigued by this farmhouse that they kept writing about, and I had this like idea of like this farmhouse that was just like a constant.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Rave that people were creating music in, and like, I've never like spoke to any of you about it, but this farmhouse that you're making music in, it, explain it to me, because 2004 me wants to know.
It was really special because we, when we got signed, we were clever, but we were like, we said, well, we should live together, and we should just constantly be creating something, whether it's, you know, artwork or photos, just like really
getting that old sort of Andy Warhol sort of loop,
exactly, like live it,
Velvet Underground vibe going
just
on.
Live it together, and like, we went to a party in this farmhouse, a friend of a friend, and was looking around, going, man, this could be the perfect place. And then we spoke to the farmer, and he was desperate for like company, because he'd like, just lives on a farm, he's harvesting, and he's like, he was like desperate. Yeah. He, you know, had a sister, but she was university, like, he was desperate. So he's like, right, we'll take like 3 rooms off you, you know, and he gave us ridiculous cheap. So we'll use the old dairy, we'll put the band in there, and then we'll have upstairs as a studio, so we can just make the album there on this farm. And yeah, I mean, it was the best time ever, because we were literally in Rutland's beautiful. And we were just, you know, 23, just...
Doesn't sound like an agricultural album, does it?
No, man, it was... But that's the thing, like, we...
Were you drinking, like, unpasteurised milk while you guys were, like, doing
no,
it?
No, we were just smoking dope all day, constantly, and eating cheese toasties and super noodles. And
that farmer probably should have opened up a tuck shop.
Man, he should have, man. The local tuck, I mean, they've never seen lads just keep coming in every like 3 hours going, you're more crisps, man, we need more crisps. But it was, and then on a Friday we'd have a party. And then after the gigs, we'd travel back. We couldn't afford hotels, so we'd just go back and we'd just carry on. So it became like, it really did, like, not that it was a cult, but it did feel... We were like living that well. We become fascinated by that period of time.
You didn't quite have that, like, you know, the early 90s, you'd phone up a number and you'd drive off with M5 and you'd like end up in a field somewhere, but you kind of had your own moment of that.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. Looking back, it was the best of times, really.
Was there as much ecstasy in those parties as it seemed like there was when you were sort of reading about it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we only thought it'd last an album, so it was, you know, it was, we didn't, we just thought, well, we got to look back, we cannot leave anything out there, you know? It was like, everything, we genuinely didn't have a plan. It was like, let's just get to the end, let's put an album out, and if, just seeing it as CD made, man, that's all we wanted.
Does that make it all the more surprising that you're, like, still... Like, you know, what is it, 6 albums in now?
Yeah, six. No, I can't quite believe. Yeah, but you just get on with it. I mean,
it's just normal. It's life. Yeah, now you've probably been doing this longer.
Yeah,
now
yeah,
than you have yeah, than you yeah, weren't before.
Exactly.
Does that mean that like you can see, like, when you go and play big shows? Because like, I know you, like, all the shows you do are absolutely huge, but I'm sure you've done absolutely massive. I don't even know, but I'm betting a tenner that you've supported the Rolling Stones at some point.
Yes.
But like, can you see yourself doing that? Can you see that carrying on like that?
I mean, I think so. Like, I don't. As long as like it was worth, like. For me and for the rest of the boys, there has to be if it was to sell t-shirts, or if it was because, you know, one of us needed a conservatory or something, you know what I mean, then like, you can, then it's not for me. But I think I like ideas are what keeps me going and
creative work.
If I've not made something in a day, I feel like I've not done, you know, I have to, whether it's a drawing.
You've got that artistic itch.
Yeah, yeah. So
that can be dangerous. That can be a really, really good thing, and yeah, it can be really dangerous as well.
I know how much I do. My wife said in by just, I switch off quite. Yeah, I can be terrible at that. I get really consumed by it, you know. But you know, it's I have to just. At the end of the day, I have to
go. Do something.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. You're probably like one of these people who's absolutely awful to go on holidays with.
Can be,
sitting there in the pool, and then you're like, that, "Oh, that's an idea."
Don't say that.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Fucking am that guy.
I do that as well.
Idiot.
I set up a record label a couple of years ago, and wow, it was like the first holiday I'd taken in about. It was the first big holiday I'd ever taken, because I was always skint before I went to Radio 1.
Yeah.
So I actually had a bit of dough in my pocket for the first time.
Amazing.
So me and my missus went to Thailand, and I was there like 2 days, and I was on the phone trying to sign this band back in London. And she's like, "What the fuck are you doing?" And I was like, "I don't know. I'm just like, I can't sit still."
How that's a lot of work, your own label.
Yeah, like it's absolute bollock, but like
it's a dream though, right?
Yeah, I like it, but like I do other things as well. Like I just, with my label, I concentrate on like 2 artists max.
Amazing.
And then that's it, and there's no us, we're not trying to like be the next XL or mm-mm, Domino. We just want to do what makes us happy and treat artists with respect.
But you know what, that's exactly how XL started.
Yeah, exactly. You know, maybe we've got the next Adele in our books, yeah, exactly, and we don't even know it yet.
Exactly.
So when young Serge walked into the careers office in your school,
yeah,
what did they tell you?
I mean, the same old story. I mean, you know,
where were you going?
Just in a local school around the corner from where we live. We grew up in a place called Cattlethorpe, and Tom in Blaby and Dibs in Blaby, which is like, what, like 2-5 minutes away.
Yeah.
And it's the local school. But, you know, it's the one, what do you want to be? You know, if I can't be in a band, then I want to be a footballer. And like, yeah, all right, mate.
Yeah, comes,
printer, have you thought about a printer? It's like, yeah, okay, man, whatever.
A printer?
Yeah, that's like a lot of people go into the printing game in Leicester.
In Leicester, yeah?
Yeah.
That's, yeah, the printer's not one of the ones I've heard before.
It's high, man, it's a high, you know, you never know.
You could be Leicester's number 9, or you could be printing the number 9 onto the back of the jersey.
Yeah. But I didn't have any, like, I didn't, like, I just knew it was going to happen.
Did you know it was going to happen for music, or did you know that something was going to happen? Because you're a pretty tasty footballer as well. Like, I've watched you on soccer before.
Yeah, it's pretty good, but, no, I just, like, I don't know, I think, like, for all the madness of Britpop and for all the excess, it definitely made kids believe that anything was possible, that you could, that it wasn't a mad concept to start a band with your mates and then go and travel the world.
Yeah.
And I think that energy was massive for us. And I think it really had an impact. So you did, you know, you would swagger. I'd swagger into the thing. You know what I mean? And I'd be like,
In your full parka?
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Yeah, like, you know, like I had like a... like a fucking rave t-shirt with an E Superman symbol and an E replacing the S, you know, and desert boots on. And I was like, nah, man, like that. I'm, you know, we're going, and you're telling everyone we're going. But like, it's crazy, because now looking back, how hard it is. And not only that, the little pieces of luck, you need to be good, but you do need those little bits of luck.
You need that,
timing.
Yeah.
There's so many elements. Like the fucking hole is so small, and it's like, so like to have that confidence to think it was going to happen is stupid. Because,
but I think that works. Like I genuinely think, if you, like, I'm not one of these people who goes, if you put it out into the universe,
no,
it'll happen, right? Because
no.
Like a lot of, it seems like a very millennial thing where people go, if I say it, it will happen.
Oh,
and like, you can say it, right, and it will happen, but you also have to put in a fucking like ton and years and years of work.
And you only ever hear the people that have said it, that have done it, that get to talk about it on station like this, goes, yeah, no, I always knew. I put it on the universe.
When you hear,
like,
Conor McGregor talking about it.
100 million people that also said the same thing. There was, you know, 10 other bands in my school that would have said this, would have had the same attitude as I did in that careers office, you know.
But it's like that, not like they were living, breathing and doing every single moment of it.
No, I mean, I think they, I think the one thing that binds anyone I've met, like whether it be an artist or a sportsman, any kind of, you know, on that level, it's the thing that binds is the hard work. Like, we'd rehearse 3 times a week, and it was you couldn't miss. I mean, I was like, no one's missed, you know. And if you did, it was a serious thing. We were like, no, you had to put that them hours in.
Yeah,
and I've never checked that. That's like, I can't, you know. But luckily for me, I love what I do, so it does not work. But you know, I'll get up earlier than anyone else, and I'll stay up later than anyone else to get the job done. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But I think you need that
massively.
I think with every project, you need somebody that's gonna lead it. Like my best friend who I used to play in the band with, we do some work together on different stuff outside of it now, and we figured it out now. Our relationship when he's working on my thing, it's my thing.
Yeah,
he's like, you know, you're there, I'm up here.
Yeah,
but when I'm working on his thing, I'm sitting minding my P's and Q's and I'll be like,
yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think you can have too many creative inputs into
dangerous.
A project.
Yeah,
is that like, I want to get to the SLF stuff the SLP stuff after a little bit, because like I feel like it's the perfect place to take it on, but we're missing out a lot of discography what was the like first fuck me moment in the band, because obviously it like kicked off fast and hard for you guys. There was no like, let's release 6 EPs and 2 albums and then hope for the best. It was like
it went pretty quick. I mean, I suppose we released Clubfoot, and I mean, comedy, humour's kind of at the centre of it. I sort of must mention that, because, you know, when I like now think about it and you kind of get a chance to look back at what you're
doing. Your first single was called Clubfoot.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
And, like, do you know what I mean?
There's so many, like, at every point, if it's not, it has to make us laugh, or there has to be some surprise, or there has to be an element of weirdness about it, or surrealness. Or
I remember like the Vlad the Impaler video.
That's what I mean.
That was pretty funny. Yeah,
I mean, you know, Vlad. It's called a track, Vlad the Impaler. I mean, it's all there's. It's all like it's like
an Iron Maiden track.
That's
or something,
what I mean.
Isn't it?
And it has, you know, it's core. It has to make me laugh. I cling to that. So we released that, and then we played Glastonbury first on this Friday morning. You know, and
it's not a Kasabian slot, is it?
Like 11 o'clock.
11 o'clock in the morning. You guys probably hadn't slept.
No, we didn't. We straight through, but peering through the curtain, and there was 20 odd thousand there, and that was a fuck me.
That's crazy.
This is like, if people turned up at this time to see this, then we are definitely connect, like what the aim was to connect, and we are deaf, something's happening.
See, at most festivals, like, you know, Glastonbury isn't most festivals, the 11 o'clock in the morning on the Friday at the stage would be like yoga, or it'd be like, you know, like a children's entertainer.
Yeah. True.
So for 20,000 people to show up on the very first day of the first proper day of the festival.
No,
crazy.
And I can't remember if Tea in the Pot was before or after, but we were
it's after
it's a similar slot. We were first on, and it was raining, and we started this. They'd not opened it was that early, they'd not opened the festival yet. And as they did, we were playing on the bottom of a hill, and people were running down the hill and sliding down into the barriers. And people kept coming, and we were looking at each other going,
what's going on?
This is mad.
Yeah.
Like, this is really happening. And
because you don't know it's connecting the way it does. Because, like, I'm sure, like, you're not seeing how many albums you're selling or stuff
not,
like that.
No, you can now. You can really get a sense.
You can see as people are buying.
I know, yeah. And, you know, exactly, yeah.
But, like, nothing gives you an indicator of success than a load of, like, drunk Scottish teenagers sliding down a hill to come see.
Yeah, honestly, it was mad. It was like that. You know that one where they throw the cheese down the hill and the chase?
Oh, yeah, like the cheese.
It's like that, man. It's like someone's getting hurt.
Do you have any like mad things like that? Because every like little bit of the country has its own like mad tradition.
Yes, I think that's a Leicester thing.
Is that a Leicester thing?
I'm sure. Oh, no, it's not. No, it's Gloucester. It's Gloucester.
It's Gloucester.
Forgive me.
That's the big red cheese.
Yes.
Rolling the red cheese down the hill.
We do a thing where of two villages, and I think it's a beer, like a beer barrel. Or something like that.
Wait, you get inside it.
You know, you basically whatever. So you've got to get the beer barrel to your village, and it starts in the middle, but it's an absolute shit show.
Oh my god!
It's like It's the most violent thing you've ever
seen. It's like just beating the head
like,
of each other.
It's like, I think it's like kind of like an early rugby where you've got to get this thing to your. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Man, people, it's full on. And if you go in, like, if you're just watching it and taking photos, like, you can, all of a sudden, it can come near, you know, and then just, you got a scar.
There's so many more sports channels now than there ever has been.
That should be on,
we should get that on pay-per-view.
It's insane.
We'll get Joe Rogan to do the commentating.
It's insane.
Empire Album 2, comes out, and, I mean... I'm pretty sure most journalists and most people in the media, because the first album had done so well, were just sitting waiting, going, "Well, where's this going to go?
Yeah.
Is this a one trick pony, or is this band got it?"
Totally. I mean, we were sort of pissed at that point. Like, we were just drunk. We went in the studio. We were sort of living, you know, like we were just 25 and. Do you know?
25, got money.
We were traveling the world. We were ramshackle, crazy sort of like a mess. And we was like, didn't even think about the pressure or like, and we just, because we'd been on this massive live thing, we thought, well, we'll just record it live. Didn't overthink it, did it really quickly. because we had Empire and Shooter running the bag, thought, well, that's quite interesting. Sort of got like a, glam thing going on,
yeah,
and we just like, let's just put it out and carry on playing live, and that you're hearing back, that's what it just feels like. I mean, you know, I think it was a good thing.
Was it more of a case of just getting back on the road?
Getting
back on the road because you genuinely like love playing on the road, or is it because you're all addicted to various different
everything,
things, and if you
yeah.
come off the road you're gonna die?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was just like, we need to keep this going, this is great. And yeah, and we'd play these huge venues, and it's like, you know, and I think if we did take them a long time to think it, we'd have probably overthought it, and it just felt, it's like, oh, you know what, you know, and we weren't really thinking straight. I mean, we weren't making business plans, it was a mad little.
I can't imagine there being like a spreadsheet in the middle of the bus going, this is what we'll be doing.
Yes,
Q1
no,
and
no,
Q2.
Totally.
Q, that comes later, but like.
That comes later.
Yeah, when you're like going, oh, fucking hell, like we've sold the X-Men albums. But at what point when you're in like a successful band like you are, that it becomes de rigueur, that it's just like you've played so many big gigs that it's just another show? Or does that ever happen? I don't know. I've never got to that point.
Yeah, no, it...
Like, you know the old Simpsons thing where they look at the back of the guitar, hello!
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cincinnati!
You definitely get used to it. And then every now and again, a huge gig will remind you of that feeling of just going, fucking hell, this is too big. I can't even get my head around this.
Mm.
But yeah, luckily... It was quite quick, but it did build. Like we got a chance to learn. I mean, we played so many shows before we got signed and during that first album that we figured out the live thing.
Yeah.
It's all about just finding out what it is that you do, and then appreciating that crowds need entertaining. However you get there, you know, some bands will, approach it their own way. As long as it's them, as long as you feel like you're getting them, then it's beautiful.
I've always with all bands and all artists, I always sort of like dip in and out a little bit because I'm always like chasing new bits and pieces here and there. It's just in my nature. And I remember when you played Radio 1's Big Weekend, and when you played Glastonbury around the same time.
Yes.
I think I hadn't seen you play live in an awful long time by that stage, and I sat down. And I was watching and I was like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
The absolute hit factory.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Like, because, the worst thing you can do as a band at a festival when you're playing to people who aren't completely just paying to go and see you is to play all the album tracks.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, when you put on your own show, you can do all you want. But
100% agree.
When you're at the festivals.
100% agree. And I think it's, you know, it's about...
But what genuinely was like a greatest hits, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, no, it was mad. It was a good one. I think we played on before the Arctic Monkeys on now. But yeah, I just find that, like, I agree. I think there's a time and a place, you know, and I think there's something nice. There's a celebration in the big tunes, like, and getting that many people you know, in front of you. Like, I'm sort of, I'm okay with that. Just play the massive tune.
What's the riff that they sing before you start playing?
So, like, probably goes, I mean, LSF's probably the kind of one that tends to sort of just get, you know, the
start. Yeah.
And then obviously the fire one, that's good.
Can you still play Clubfoot with gusto after? Because, like,
yeah,
the thing is, like, it's been in the popular conscience for 15 years. Because, like, I watch so much football and it's this thing on Sky Sports.
Yeah.
I'm just like...
It's mad. I mean, you sort of go through phases, like you sort of fall back in love with.
Yeah.
You know... There were times, like, you know, you have to give them a
little jumper. You're like, oh,
yeah. And every now and again, you'll get reminded of. But, like, you know, I think on that, you know, I'm sort of there for the, I'm there for the crowd. You know, it's like, you know, I don't really feel like, we're going back to that huge, the huge crowd thing. Like, I'm there for them. I'm there to make sure.
They're having a good time.
Yeah, man.
Because you know exactly what it feels like to be in that muddy field.
Well, that's the thing. I feel like I need to... Like, I want to be in there with everyone else, you know? And I think when you... performance, for me, I want everyone to... Like, I want to break down the barriers of, like, hey, man, I'm cool, you know, all that shit. Like, I don't want any of that. It's like, and I want to be in that mosh pit right now with you. Every single one of you, and I want us to go together. Like, I'll count you down to the bit where we all go.
I mean, that much, like,
when I started to tap into that world, you know, as a band, you know what I mean? Because I think it's a nice little added thing that we've developed over the years. It's like, man, there's some specialness to that.
Big time. I want to move on to the SLP.
Ah, nice.
Yeah, because, like, I'm really enjoying it. Like,
thank you.
I feel like your collabs are mad on point as well.
Yeah, I know.
You got Slow Tie in there. You got Lil Sims in there. I think there's two tracks out today, right?
Yeah.
Album hasn't dropped yet.
Yeah, not yet. No, not till late August.
Late August. Yeah. I'm not sure when we put this out. But tell me about that, because, like, this is like a whole different side. Like, you're definitely switched on. Like, number one, where are you picking up the Slow Tie? Where are you picking up Lil Sims?
I mean, I just wanted to collaborate. Was like a huge at the forefront. And then I love the idea of sort of like British artists and then young British artists that I consider to be at the forefront of, like, you know, and
well, you pick two of them.
Amazing. I know, with Sims, I didn't even know she had an album out. I knew on favourites that I needed.
Sims has released like about 200 tracks at this stage. She's a workhorse.
She's so good. And then I went to see Slow Tie in Birmingham. Because I'd read a few bits about him. I like the sort of Northampton and some, you know, it's my neck of the woods, and he blew me. He did make me that gig. It made me feel like, well, we were sort of in a similar sort of this rawness, this attitude, like this confidence.
He's a rock star. He's got rock star mentality, punk rock mentality.
Absolutely, and. Yeah, he's just like the sweetest guy. But I just didn't want to give him like a beat. I wanted to sort of like give him like this like cinematic, like Italian, almost it's really powerful music.
Mm-hmm.
Just to see where he'd go with it, because I think he appreciated
the freedom.
Like, yeah, and like, I was not expecting that. I mean, the whole album, I want at every point the listener to go, I don't really understand what's happened now, you know. So it's like for him just to turn up in the middle and you know, his delivery. And he's gone quite psych with it, which I've really appreciated.
Yeah, I've listened to that kid. That kid can do absolutely anything. Mm. He can do hip-hop, he can do grime, he can do...
Special artist.
Like punk rock and loads of others. Can we say who else is on the record? Like, this isn't going to be coming out till August.
No, I mean, so they're the two that was the I was really happy with, you know.
Yeah, and then the rest of it is you. Have you gone back to like the room? like to do this? Have you got into like a swanky studio to do
no,
it?
No, no, I always stay at home. Like as the studio has changed after each record, that's got a little bit bigger and the equipment, I've a little bit more equipment. But no, I always.
It's not like you're up in the box room and your missus is like, your tea's ready. Just no, thumping the roof with the broom.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, just at home. But yeah, now my boys come in and just fiddle with it. They finish school and they just come in and just turn all the knobs and fire.
How old are your lads?
It's like eight and six.
Eight and six?
So yeah.
So they're like aware enough of what's going on?
Yeah, they're great, man. They really are. Like I say, the beginning that they have, like it's taken me this long to figure it out. And I'm like, they're starting here. Like to them, you know, just making an album is that's what your dad does in the studio in the garden. Like,
yeah, but everybody else's dad's a printer.
Yeah, true.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Are they picking up like the sort of music vibes from you?
Yeah. Ennio he's named after Morriconian.
Oh wow, right.
So
okay.
He's picking it up.
I see. I think I'm the same as you. Like I've five kids. They're gonna have wee Irish names.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Totally. I'm going to give them really like unpronounceable Irish names with like all sorts of weird dots and fadas and stuff over the top of it.
Love it.
Are you educating them in the Italian way?
Yeah, my dad is. He's on them heavily.
Well, I can't wait for the record to come out.
Thanks, man.
Thank you so much for popping by and
doing
our first ever one in this like brand new swanky studio. So
you feeling
so
it?
Or
did you miss the
there's
the grime.
I'll always miss the grime. Do you know what I mean? Like I know where I come from. I get illusions of grandeur every once in a while, and then you go home and somebody just puts you back in your place. But that's just being Irish, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks for coming in with the demo. Pleasure. And I suppose are you doing this project till the end of the year? Are you going to tour it?
Yeah. So I've got some dates in September. In London and Birmingham. And I got
Shows, wee shows,
just tiny little theatres. And I'm going to, you know, I'm just planning the live show now. I'm going to experiment heavily with it.
No doubt.
Yeah. So that's going to be, you know, along with, you know, like, mirror the album in terms of like, it's going to be not, you know, what you expect. I just can't wait for that.
And does that mean like Kasabian will be back like next year, the year after?
Yeah. So I've started that. So I've got.
Hold on, you started a new album and you've got this one at the same time?
Yeah.
Fuck's sake.
But it just happens when it, you know, it's like.
When it hits you?
I'm catching fish, so. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, there's the album for the title.
Fucking hell, no.
Serge, cheers, man.
Thanks, man.